Hey everyone, this is Andy, better known as Love Retro BTW on Twitter, X, Threads, IG, and Cafe BTW on TikTok and YouTube. A quick update that the Cafe BTW podcast is taking a very long hiatus, but I still have something really amazing to share with you. We have a fantastic retro gaming community on Twitter X, where we've crossed well over 2,000 passionate members. And if you're a lover of retro gaming, this is the perfect place to share your content, showcase your pickups, or just chat about your favorite old school games. To dive into nostalgia and become a part of the thriving community, click in the show notes on the Cafe BTW link tree or go right to my Twitter X profile on Love Retro BTW. And now, without further ado, gear up for another sensational episode of the Gamers Week Podcast.
Coming up on Gamers Week Podcast.
Unity hasn't gone public with the change because executives are still running them by partners and don't want to repeat last week's communication debacle.
Is it a communication debacle when you said exactly what you mean and people didn't like it?
Of course it is.
That's that whole, sorry for the confusion.
Right.
No one was confused.
Yeah, I don't think anybody was real confused. I think you got your message across loud and clear and you're like, wait, people don't like it.
That's the confusion.
Yeah, you're right. It's their confusion. I don't need your attitude. 100% do not need your attitude. I have a backup going this time.
Same here. I didn't think I was hosting tonight.
Surprise!
It's that cold finger in the butt.
Right. Yeah. Hey, welcome to Gamers Week Podcast. Are we ready to get started?
I don't know if we have enough.
Yeah, I don't know if that's enough of a cold open.
That's true.
Enough of a cold finger open. You know what? F*** it. That's the motto moving forward. F*** it. Let's go for it. Yes, I'm ready to start.
All right. Welcome to Gamers Week Podcast. Like the name says, we analyze the best, worst, and weirdest headlines of the past week in the video game industry. This is episode 91, and today is Wednesday, September 20th, 2023. My name is Donnie G. Retro, and I will be your gracious host this evening, but I am not alone. With me are my two lovely co-hosts. My first co-host would rather carry around an old typewriter than use her phone's keyboard. Blue Williams, how are you this evening?
You know, typewriters are underappreciated. They may be old and clunky, but like there's a real tactile feel to them that is missing in modern electronics.
People would be able to hear you from a mile away with all the clickety-clack and the tactile.
Like they can with everybody's mechanical keyboards?
You got a good point, but I'm not carrying around my mechanical keyboard all over the place. What am I, a savage?
Just carry it around like a keytar or something.
So, yes. And you hear my second co-host, who prefers colonoscopies over using a Mac any day. Mr. Ryan Payne, how are you doing this evening?
We don't kink shame, remember?
Yeah, I don't even know how to respond to that. Jesus, you have me silent. This is a first, sir. Well done.
So when you start a new job where they're like, hey, we're going to give you a Mac to use. And you're like, do you guys have anybody here that can just stick their hand right up my butt? I'd rather prefer that.
Actually, we do. Oh, that, I hedged my bets in the wrong direction there.
Talk about your all-time backfires.
Right.
All right, let's jump right into our reviews, reactions, and requests. At Arcade Main says, your Die Hard skit reminds me of a rather infamous TV edit of Die Hard 2, where instead of his famous line, John McClane says, yippee-ki-yay, Mr. Falcon.
What?
They even referenced it in the recent DuckTales reboot cartoon. I know exactly what he's talking about. The made-for-TV movies, they always edit out the curse words and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. I remember The Big Lebowski, the TV version, where instead of "this is what happens when you F a stranger in the ass," it's "this is what happens when you meet a stranger in the Alps." You have Walter Sobchak just slamming a crowbar on the windshield of that Corvette that's out in the street. And it's like, "this is what happens, Larry. This is what happens when you meet a stranger in the Alps." And it makes no sense. He's destroying a car while saying that.
So the only one I remember is replacing Jesus Christ with cheese and rice.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's a classic. That's a classic. But the fact that they know that and would reference that on the recent DuckTales reboot, I mean, that's a deep cut.
That is.
That's well done.
That's going into the weeds. At Gaming and Gain says, "listening to the section on the Xbox credit card makes me think we are heading to a situation presented in the office in which we are all going to earn Shroot Bucks on every purchase." At A Gamer Looks at 40 says, "let's go. So stoked you made the Mr. Rogers of gaming podcasts throw out an F-bomb. So excited on the big news."
Thank you, Bill.
Thanks,
Thank
Bill.
You very much. And we normally don't do this, but we wanted to share a special message we got from at Holy Headshot. He says, "I used to be on a gaming podcast. It was a blast and we had a great run. Life gets in the way. No juicy story. We just couldn't do it anymore. We had our farewell episode right at the onset of COVID. All the podcasts we befriended had either burned out or closed down since, also because life just gets in the way. The community I spent so much time around was gone. And then you had the firestorm of COVID and social media, so the few remaining hangouts online finally had enough. It sucked. I kind of felt like the last kid in the neighborhood, still checking accounts when everyone got married, had kids, got great jobs, and moved away. And then you guys posted your 3-episode start, and my God, was it a breath of fresh air. Don't get me wrong, there's one other show I kept up with, but that was pretty much it. Off to hockey and true crime podcasts for work, but nothing ever filled the void until I started listening to you guys. I cannot stand my Friday night coworker, but thank goodness the night starts off with a fresh Gamers Week show. Let's hope your coworker isn't a listener." "I really can't say enough how glad I am I found you guys. Maybe it sounds cheesy or silly, but I really can't overstate how much I appreciate you guys or how much something other people may trivialize, like a gaming podcast, really puts a smile on my face. Thank you. So please don't listen to the morons trolling your giveaway, the douchebag trolling Blue for posting a new profile pic, or any of the other idiots throwing shade at you guys, because you've got a community of people who really enjoy what you do and look forward to it every week. That's something special. And I, for one, am very grateful for it." Holy Headshot, thank you from the bottom of our hearts for those kind words. We greatly appreciate it.
Very much so. Not going to lie, it was a rough week. So hearing stuff like this reaffirms the fact that we do have a good thing going here and we're proud of it. We're proud of what we do. And we really do appreciate our listeners.
100%. Absolutely. I mean, this is often why we do it. We don't always hear the good. We more than often hear the bad. So it's really special when somebody just takes the time to reach out to us and let us know. I'm not great at taking compliments, but yeah, this was fantastic. So thank you.
And now it's time for the
scared me.
Don't listen to it. Crows are all liars. I know a story about a crow.
I hate your stories.
I know a story about a boy who hated stories. I could tell you about how Atari dumped their games in a landfill and then blamed it on E.T. Those were always your favorites.
Those were not my favorites. My favorites were the ones about the console wars.
Oh, my sweet summer child. What do you know about console wars? The console wars began in the 90s when Nintendo and Sega ceased to be brands and became pledges of loyalty. When friend forsook friend on the playground and in the lunchroom, in the war cries of "now you're playing with Bauer" and "Genesis does" when Nintendo echoed off the walls of the Toys R Us. Those were the days when you played Mario, were fighting words, and Sega stacked consoles on top of consoles on top of consoles like a Tower of Babel that ultimately spelled their doom. And those of us that survived went on to make polls on the internet about the console wars just so we could feel something again. In that darkness, the PlayStation came for the first time. It swept through cities and tech conventions and store shelves, wielding its 3D graphics, unaware that the monster called Xbox was right behind.
Oh.
What are you telling him now?
Only what the little Lord wants to hear.
What is that from?
Did you guys not watch Game of Thrones?
I did, but I don't remember that particular part.
Well, okay.
It's been a hot minute since I've watched Game of Thrones. I mean, that was well done.
Yes. Scared the shit out of me twice in that, too.
Mission accomplished, then. All right. Every Monday on Twitter, we post our VIP. That is our very important poll. And if you'd like to participate, follow us on Twitter at GamersWeekPC. So the question this week, with the first day of autumn in the Northern Hemisphere this week, tell us, what's your favorite companion to a fall session of gaming? Coming in third place, we have a warm beverage with 20.7% of the votes. Second place was comfy sweatpants with 21.6%. And the winner was your favorite hoodie with 48.1% of the votes. We also had 9.6% of people vote others. So let's look at some of the comments from the poll. At Zootsack says, when it's cold enough for the very toasty Atari hoodie to come out and some Bovril to drink. I don't know what that is, and I'm afraid to ask. At Foam Luller said, my thick fuzzy socks. At PixVG says, coffee with a shot of Sambuca, stirred if hot, shaken with coconut milk and ice if cold. I like your style.
It's like a Greek hot toddy, right?
Kind of. At Munchy Dragon says, soup and all of the above.
My man.
And at Slices of Pies says, my gaming Speedos. Or if they're in the wash, a hockey jersey.
All right. So who made an alt account to troll me on this one?
You mean gaming Speedos are not a thing that everybody wears?
Well, I wear them, so I
wear. With a nice place for the joystick. All right. So how did you vote in the poll, Ryan?
So I am a huge fan of the hoodie brand called Udi. It's basically like a Snuggie that goes all the way around and has a hood to it. I have four of these things.
Jeez.
Yeah. And they're like pizza, avocado, sloth. And I forget what the last one was. I think maybe it's monkeys or something. But those are what come out when I want a really nice fall gaming session. Now, the rest are definitely in play as well. Sweatpants and a hot drink. But the hoodie is the quintessential piece to my gaming session. I love them. You know, it's huge. You swim in them. They go like way past my knees, which at my height does not happen very often. So, yeah, I absolutely love those things and wouldn't game without one during the fall.
All right. What about you, Donnie?
That's the second time you've mentioned swimming in a hoodie. Who swims in a hoodie?
I do. Breaststroke. I told you that.
Okay. That's.
He's very dedicated to perfecting his breaststroke.
Oh, and just for clarification, Bovril is a thick and salty meat extract paste, best enjoyed with butter or toast, or as a traditional sip with hot water.
Yeah, there's too many options there. I don't know which one to choose.
I'm going to go with Ryan on this one. Once the weather starts turning a little bit cooler, I'm always wearing a hoodie. I have the windows open to let the cold air kind of come through, and I can sit there in both sweatpants and a hoodie. It just depends on what game I'm playing. If it's something aggressive, like, I don't know, let's just say Mario Kart, you best believe I'm going to be sitting there with nothing on, maybe something covering the bitch, you know, but if I sweat, I sweat while playing Mario Kart, and it's just, I cannot be wearing any clothes. But for the most part, a hooded sweatshirt.
All right.
Blue, what about you?
Everybody who knows me knows that I'm the hoodie person. I have tons of hoodies. I wear them all the time. So that's the obvious answer. But I will kind of echo what Donnie said in that the whole why not all three thing, that doesn't work. That's way too hot. Hoodies and sweatpants and a warm beverage, you're going to be miserable and like opening all the windows and stripping down pretty fast. So I'm going to say hoodie. And then beyond that, I'm going to say something iced, either coffee or whiskey over ice. And that is the best companion to autumn time gaming.
Blues into day drinking.
And?
No, I'm not. I'm not judging.
All right, let's go ahead and take a look at our patron shout outs.
We couldn't do what we do without the help of our gorgeous patrons. Here are the generous folks supporting Gamers Week on Patreon. Sheriff Snacks, Frank Grande, Love Retro BTW, Steven Sand, Ramboski, Terry Kinnair, Doomgi Forever, Ludo Timbo, Ducks in Disguise, Don't Make Me Pull This Car Over, Games with Coffee, Hybrid Divide, Matto 1606, You Fall Before Me, Davey PGH, The Redox PDX Family, including Shannon and Luke, Shalaziel, Zach Huge Thanks, Number One Blue Sick Boys Fan, Sassy Sony, Evo Lust, Rai Rai's Secret Best Friend, Mega Retroman, Gamma Troid, Michael LeKite, Emo S, Bill Tucker, The Real Retro Game Brews, Fruitcakes Number One Stan, Ducks with Thick Thigh. The award for greeting the Discord every morning goes to Michael LeKite. Beef Wellington Hot Pockets for when you're white and trashy but still want to be fancy as fuck. Ted Koppel's Doppelganger Airplane Hanger. Yes, I nailed it. Wizard of Zardoz, Bobson Dugnut, Retro Blast Pat, Great Sayaman 81, D&T Zilla Guy, Johnny Boombots, and Crunchy Kong. If you liked what you hear today, and we really hope that you do, please consider joining us on Patreon. Your support helps cover the costs of producing the show, as well as there are other cool stuff we'll be doing, like prizes and giveaways. You'll also access our weekly patron-only bonus cast called Gamers Week Uncut, Patrons with Benefits. Visit patreon.com/gamersweek or follow the link in the show notes to learn more.
Let's go ahead and jump right into the headlines for this week. Our headline segment is proudly sponsored by the Retro Game Club podcast. It's a fantastic family-friendly retro gaming podcast. In each episode, Rob and Hugh pick two games to play and discuss, as well as news, interviews, and other topics. Right now, they're playing through Narc and King's Quest III: To Air is Human. Visit them at retrogameclub.net or follow the link in the show notes. Have either of you ever played Narc in the arcade?
No, but I do know that Narc was one of the arcade machines in the original Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles
movie. Yes, it was.
That the kids were playing. So I know one of the bosses.
It was an interesting game when you got to see all of the people explode and the body parts flying everywhere and the blood and everything and picking up the drugs that actually, like, it kind of looked like drugs. And then we get the NES port and you're like, huh. This doesn't seem to be the same. I wonder why.
Quick question. How do you know what the drugs look like?
I plead the fifth.
Donnie grew up in the 80s.
Yes, I did.
All right, first up tonight from BBC, Mortal Kombat 1 Nintendo Switch version will be fixed, says Boss. Mortal Kombat 1, the new game in the long-running series, is out, but the Nintendo Switch version of the beloved beat-em-up has been getting a lot of kicking versus its Xbox and PlayStation rivals. Pause there. You can tell it's big news when the BBC deigns to cover a video game headline, and then the poor writer, who has no clue, then calls Mortal Kombat a beat-em-up.
Uh-oh.
Fans have been posting side-by-side comparisons, showing the gulf in graphics and criticizing the game's overall performance. Series creator Ed Boon tells BBC Newsbeat the hybrid consoles version will absolutely be getting an update. One of the common criticisms of the Switch version is its price. It costs the same as the more advanced PS5 and Xbox Series editions. The game, a soft reboot of the series timeline, was ported to the Nintendo machine by Shiver Entertainment and Saber Interactive, rather than the main developer, NetherRealm Studios. Studios. But Ed's message to fans who've bought or are thinking of buying the title on Switch is that it will be supported like we did with Mortal Kombat 11. Anything that we see that is not acceptable will absolutely be addressed, he says. Despite the criticism of the Switch version, Ed says Mortal Kombat has continued to grow, and the past few releases have been the biggest sellers to date. I don't know how many games that have been around for 30 years are at their peak, he says. That's a really special kind of thing, where players are still with us. Players who are now grown up with their own kids, still playing Mortal Kombat. That just blows my mind. One thing that's got fans talking is the inclusion of Jean-Claude Van Damme, who appears as a skin for series regular Johnny Cage. When we made our very first Mortal Kombat game, before it was even called Mortal Kombat, we wanted to make Van Damme the video game. But in 1992, Ed says, the 80s action star was understandably not in a rush to work with two guys in their 20s saying, hey, we want to make a video game based on you. So I could see why he would say no, says Ed. Instead, they created Johnny Cage, the cocky movie star with a strong resemblance to the muscles from Brussels, as Van Damme is known. Ed says the team tried a few more times to recruit Van Damme, but the planets would not align. Until 30 years later, they did, says Ed. And here we are with Mortal Kombat 1, the ultimate kind of full circle moment.
He's not going to do Mortal Kombat, but he will definitely do the Street Fighter movie.
Standards, you know? Have you guys seen the side-by-side comparisons of the game?
I have, and I thought it was a joke at first. I was like, no way. There's no way it's that bad. But yeah, it is. It is noticeably different. It's very, how would I call it, PS2, PS3-y looking?
I'll give it PS3.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's horrible.
It's real bad. And while I definitely agree that the criticism that the Switch version costing the same, despite looking like two generations ago, is highway robbery, akin to highway robbery-ish. But then again, if you bought it on Switch, I'm not sure what you're expecting.
Where was the oversight?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Yeah.
You allow another developer studio to port this over. Okay, aren't you looking at this and saying, yeah, maybe we can like kind of postpone the Switch version and redo this to get it up to speed before launching it? You know, people are going to criticize you for this and crucify you for it. You're charging full price for something that looks like it belongs in the PS2.
Yeah, it's like there was no quality control at all. And I mean, that's been the criticism of the Switch for its entire life cycle, is it can't play the big AAA games, or if it can, the AAA games often have to port over as cloud versions because the Switch just can't do it. That's not what it was designed to do. But the publishers say, hey, more money, so let's port it over regardless of how it looks. So
right.
I still, like, I get people being upset, but still, if you bought it on Switch, like I already said, you had to know. You had to.
So how are they going to fix this?
I don't see how you could.
Yeah, absolutely getting an update. Okay, you're not going to be able to update the Switch to be able to make it perform any better.
Right.
So it will be supported like we did with Mortal Kombat 11. What happened with Mortal Kombat 11 on the Switch? Was it on the Switch?
Uh-huh. It was.
Okay.
I actually have Mortal Kombat X on Switch, but Mortal Kombat X came out in 2015. So not as far of a jump, I guess I would say.
Right. I mean, essentially, 2015 is PS4.
Yeah. PS4, PS3.
Right.
Okay, so one of the...
Which is about in line with the Switch capabilities.
one of the people that purchased the Mortal Kombat 11 for the Switch says, I haven't had this even 2 weeks as of this writing, but wanted to write something. Primary motivator for purchase was portability, whether to be played on flights, in bed, or other things like that. It plays well. It's just that the graphics suffer. Lighting's bad. There are occasional stutters between cutscenes, and there's pixelation, especially noticeable on the character's hair. This really makes me wonder why this game was released with these issues. Again, you release the game with issues. I don't know what they fixed with Mortal Kombat 11 because, A, it's the Switch. It can't handle it.
Well, I don't think that they meant supported as in fixed. I think that they meant that they supported it through the normal life cycle of the game because it got DLC and its combat packs and everything.
Right.
Maintained online servers for it, stuff like that.
I have a solution.
Okay.
Don't call it Mortal Kombat 1. call it Mortal Kombat 0.5.
It's a half a combat.
Then you know what you're getting into.
Yep.
All right, next up from IGN, Unity has apologized for its install fee policy and says it will be making changes to it.
Mm-hmm. Called it.
Unity has apologized for the confusion, what was confusing, and angst at the runtime fee policy it has announced last week has caused and revealed it will be making changes to it. Unity took to Twitter/X, I hate that, to share the news, saying it has been taking a number of people inside and outside the company and is planning on changing course to the controversial policy. While it didn't share any details on what those changes may be, it did promise another update will arrive in a couple of days. "We have heard you," Unity wrote. "We apologize for the confusion and angst the runtime fee policy we announced on Tuesday caused. We are listening, talking to our team members, community, customers, partners, and we'll be making changes to the policy. We will share an update in a couple of days. Thank you for your honest and critical feedback. The Unity runtime fee policy is set to go into effect January 1st, 2024, and would charge 20 cents per install for any game with more than 200,000 installs." Unity tried to clarify the policy, saying it will only count net new installs on any device starting January 1st, and devs would not be paying fees on reinstallations. Unity also claimed that 90% of the customers will not be affected by this change. The developer community did not take kindly to these proposed changes and clarifications, and many teams across the globe, including Rust 2 developer Facepunch Studios, said that they won't be making their games in Unity now. Others like Massive Monster threatened to delete its Unity-made game Call to the Lamb on January 1st should these changes happen. The pushback got so severe that Unity offices in San Francisco and Austin had to close due to what is called a credible death threat. A new report from Bloomberg outlines some of the changes reportedly coming to the policy. According to the report from Jason Schreier, Unity told staffers it is considering capping fees to 4% of a game's revenue for customers making over $1 million. Additionally, installations that count towards reaching the threshold of fee enforced won't be retroactive, per the Bloomberg report. Unity hasn't gone public with the change because executives are still running them by partners and don't want to repeat last week's communication debacle.
Is it a communication debacle when you said exactly what you mean and people didn't like it?
Of course it is.
That's that whole, sorry for the confusion. Right. No one was confused.
Yeah, I don't think anybody was real confused. I think you got your message across loud and clear and you're like, wait, people don't like it.
That's the confusion.
Yeah, you're right. It's their confusion.
They're scaling it back and saying, hey, April Fools, but, you know, it's September. Sorry.
Yeah. It was a total FAFO moment, right? Mm-hmm. Because they were playing chicken with all the devs out there saying, we think that you need us more than we need you. And then they found out that was not the case.
So what's to keep or what's to prevent all of these companies now that have already said, we're not going to go with Unity if they continue to do this? Do you think Unity has put such a bad taste in their mouth that they're just going to go ahead and say, F it, and not go with Unity just because?
Oh, yeah. And that's most of the response that I saw to them trying to backpedal is overwhelmingly people saying, it's way too late, bud. Nobody's going to use your company again. And there's nothing you can do to save yourself now.
So what was interesting is that on Spotify, we actually had a response to our podcast for this. Let me see if I can pull it up here real quick. So Goose and Clover said, President Biden signed a higher wage / salary into law in November 2022. This went into effect this past May 2023. Unity has employees who they need to pay more now that they had to pay prior to May.
Unity and every other company out there.
Right.
So you make changes to your business model, but don't be stupid about it.
Right. You don't necessarily pass on that to your consumers or, God forbid, in this particular instance, your developers, for crying out loud.
It does get passed along to your consumers. Of course. Most likely, somebody has to pay it. Either your consumers pay it or your employees pay it, whatever. But you can't spit in the face of the people and the companies that you rely on to do business yourself. There was a way to do this correctly, and they just completely missed it.
Well, and the thing is, too, if you wanted to just strictly cover payroll increases for that, I can't imagine that it would be as high as what they would be making with this whole new process. So I don't necessarily believe 100% that it's just about paying their employees more. Because if you think about it, if this went through and everybody was like, yeah, let's do it, woo, they would have made money hand over fist in this process. But taking that money away from the people who are basically creating the product for you.
Right.
And they would have, you know, like you just said, they would have made money hand over fist. They would have given their employees just a little bit of that. Say, hey, see, you guys are seeing the trickle-down effect. We got more money from the developers that create stuff on Unity. We're giving it back to you. Oh, this over here? Yeah, pay no attention to this $50 million check I just cashed. I'm going on a vacation to Belize, and I'm taking my private jet. But don't worry about that.
You guys enjoy your pizza, though. That's on us.
Yeah, oh, yes. You guys want sausage or cheese?
You can only have one, though. We don't need two toppings.
Make sure you pass it, Milton, so everybody gets it.
But I was told that I would receive a piece. From VGC, the original Call of Duty Warzone will shut down on Thursday. Activision will shut down the original Call of Duty Warzone this Thursday, September 21st. The free-to-play Battle Royale game launched in March 2020 and was a smash hit, attracting over 100 million players in 13 months, according to its publisher. It went offline for a couple of weeks in November 2022 so that Activision could focus on the launch of its successor, which was at the time called Warzone 2.0, but has since dropped the numbers from its title. The original Warzone was then relaunched in the form of the stripped-back Warzone Caldera, named after its World War II-themed island map, which had replaced its launch map, Verdansk. Boo! Caldera players were able to access all the skins and weapons they'd purchased or unlocked across three premium Call of Duty titles, which aren't compatible with the new Warzone. Again, boo! Activision announced in June that it planned to end support for the game this month in order to focus on other Call of Duty content. Following Caldera's closure, players will be able to access their purchased content in Modern Warfare, Black Ops Cold War, and Vanguard multiplayer modes. This year's Call of Duty game, Modern Warfare 3, is a direct sequel to last year's Modern Warfare 2. Set for release on November 10th, 2023, development is being led by Sledgehammer in collaboration with Infinity Ward, while Treyarch is heading up its Zombies mode. As an avid Call of Duty player, I am sad that they are taking away one of the best maps in history. Verdansk is very beloved. And the fact that all of your skins that you spent money on, they don't migrate over.
Really?
They don't.
Only to other versions of Call of Duty?
Only to those particular Call of Duty titles, which will, again, be phased out at their end of life. So I am completely done buying any type of skin on any game whatsoever. Even if they might have some... You know, if they had a Kate Upton skin that you can get for Warzone, it's like, hey, get this one. I'm like, you know what? It's tempting, but I think I'm going to pass on this one.
But if I bought it for your birthday.
If you bought it, sure. That's fine with me. I'm not spending my money on it.
Jiggle, jiggle, jiggle.
I mean, in some ways, this hardly seems like news, right? Another year, another Call of Duty game coming on.
Yep.
But the original Warzone is kind of an odd little time capsule in the history of the pandemic, I guess.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Because of the timing of when it was dropped versus when everybody was locked up at home. I mean, it was like you were either playing Animal Crossing or you were playing Call of Duty Warzone. I know in our house, Mr. Blue was up here for hours and hours and hours, like every day, obsessed with that game. Mm-hmm. And I know so many of his friends were the same. Well, it may seem silly in a lot of ways to say, I know it helped so many people through the lockdowns.
A personal story, Donnie was playing the original Warzone. I was on furlough at work, and that got me through a pretty mentally tough time was watching him.
Aww.
And that was something that nostalgically I will remember fondly because, again, that was a pretty tough time going through. The whole world is shut down. And by the way, we're not going to pay you for 6 weeks.
Right. I would get on it right in the mornings, like wake up, check my emails, make sure I didn't have any meetings. If I did, attend those. And then, bam, right to Warzone. I'd have my laptop up, wiggle the mouse to show that I was still working, and Warzone till about 4 o'clock whenever my wife and kids would get home, and then spend some family time, and then right back to Warzone for the rest of the night. And it had me. Verdansk was so much fun. Nowadays, I don't play Warzone that much. I still maybe play it once or twice a week, but it's vastly different than where we were 3 years ago.
And pro tip, if you're going to do the mouse wiggle, just buy an oscillating fan, get a little bit of shrimp. Works great.
I'm not that smart to come up with that kind of concoction.
Oh, yeah. You're not MacGyver here, buddy.
Right. I need an ice pick, a snorkel, and an orange.
Trust me, bro. I made bongs with less.
And now let's take a look at our top three new releases for the week.
All right, it's a pretty big week. First up is Lies of P out on PS5, Xbox Series X and S, PS4, Xbox One, PC, and Mac. Lies of P is a thrilling Souls-like that takes the story of Pinocchio, turns it on its head, and sets it against the darkly elegant backdrop of the Belle Epoque era. In this Souls-like, you must adapt yourself and your weapons to face untold horrors, untangle the unfathomable secrets of the city's elites, and choose whether to confront predicaments with the truth or weave lies to overcome them on the journey to find yourself. Develop a unique combat style to counter vicious enemies and terrain by weaving together dynamic weapon combinations, utilizing the Legion arms, and activating new abilities. Payday 3, out on PS5, Xbox Series X and S, and PC. Payday 3 is the much-anticipated sequel to one of the most popular co-op shooters ever. Step out of retirement back into the life of crime in the shoes of the Payday gang, the envy of their peers, and the nightmare of law enforcement wherever they go. Several years after the crew's reign of terror over Washington, D.C. has ended, they assemble once again to deal with the threat that roused them out of early retirement. Not just anyone is worthy of standing at your side for something as important as a heist. Likewise, Payday 3 is best enjoyed with close friends in mind, whether you bring them from your childhood or make them along the road. And finally, Mortal Kombat 1, out on PS5, Xbox Series X and S, Switch, and PC. Discover a reborn Mortal Kombat universe created by the fire god Liu Kang. Mortal Kombat 1 ushers in a new era of the iconic franchise with a new fighting system, game modes, and fatalities. So taking a look at the releases this week, what are you in for, Donnie?
Instinctively, I would have to say Mortal Kombat 1, but I'm in no rush to go out and pick it up. Payday 3, I really haven't had the chance to take a look at. I've never played any entry into the Payday series, so I can't say that I would be in a rush to pick up the third option. But I mean, I do like the whole heist factor in a video game. It's just I'd have to sit down and play one of these things to really say I'd be into it, which leaves us with Lies of P. Lies of P looks like it's Bioshock-ish, and it looks amazing. So right now, the toss-up here is Mortal Kombat 1 or Lies of P. And I think since Lies of P is available on PS4 or Xbox One, I'd probably go and pick that one up first.
What about you, Ryan?
Payday 3, I've never played a Payday game either, so I'm probably not terribly interested in going to pick that one up. Mortal Kombat 1, love Mortal Kombat. I have for a long time as a kid, but based off of just some of the descriptions about how you've got like these other characters that can help out, it just seems it's very complex, maybe more than I'd be looking out of a fighting game. I feel like you'd have to learn a lot more in order to be good, and I am lazy. So, which brings me to Lies of P. I typically do not like Souls-like games. I'm not good at them. They're frustrating. They're difficult. But this one just completely flips it on its head. This whole concept and just the world that you're in is dark and dank. And then it's about Pinocchio. It just seems really, really interesting. And it'd be something that I would at least like to say, yeah, it's a Souls-like game, but there's this extra X factor that would make it interesting to me. So I think I'm going to go with Liza P on this one.
Hmm. All right.
Believe it or not.
Blue, what,
Blue,
about,
what
you?
About you? Jinx, you owe me beer. Boom!
So Payday 3, co-op shooter. No thanks. You know what that means for me. Mortal Kombat 1, I do like Mortal Kombat games, but I'm not a fighting game person, and I have absolutely no interest in playing online. So to that end, I usually run one or two Mortal Kombat games behind whatever's the newest. So I will probably get it eventually, but it's going to be several years before I do. And then I'm only going to play through the campaign and maybe do some local versus matches, whatever. So that brings me to Lies of P, Gothic Steampunk Pinocchio. Yes, please. I've had this pre-ordered for a while. It's supposed to be here tomorrow. I am excited.
I think this year I have purchased more new games than I have in the past couple of years.
I will say having a podcast in which we talk about the new releases definitely helps with that.
True.
We're going to drag you guys kicking and screaming into the 21st century.
No, I don't want to.
But where's the Super Nintendo game?
And now it's time to take a look at our main topic for the evening.
From Wired, the biggest revelations from the Microsoft Xbox leaks. In what's been cited as the biggest leak in the company's history, Microsoft revealed a massive amount of information about forthcoming Xbox refreshes, new-gen systems, and more after uploading a series of unredacted documents to a corp website as part of the ongoing Federal Trade Commission versus Microsoft case. The leak was ricocheted across the internet Tuesday, offers not just a roadmap of the game giant's years to come, but also never-before-seen insight into Microsoft's inner workings. The files were discovered early Tuesday morning by users on gaming forum Reset Era. Judge Jacqueline Scott Corey wrote that the court ordered involved parties to confer and provide the court with a secure cloud link with relevant documents to the case, along with redactions. Microsoft provided the link to the documents were uploaded to the case's official page. In other words, Microsoft uploaded the documents without redacting what has now leaked. Leaks happen constantly in the game industry. Earlier this year, Sony suffered its own leak as part of the FTC versus Microsoft trial over some poorly done Sharpie redactions. But this particular instance is exceptional in its size and breadth and the sheer volume of speculation about Microsoft's future that documents caused.
On X, formerly known as Twitter, Xbox head Phil Spencer, they didn't say boss, wrote that although the company has seen the conversation around old emails and documents, not all of the information that leaked was up to date. It is hard to see our team's work shared in this way because so much has changed and there's so much to be excited about right now and in the future, Spencer wrote. Still, what did emerge from the document leak created a frenzy of hypothesizing about Microsoft's aspirations. Here are the biggest takeaways. According to the internal documents, mid-cycle console refreshes are on the way. The Series X console refresh, internally known as Brooklyn, is expected in November.
No sleep till.
It's more cylindrical in design than its boxy predecessor, has no disk drive, and will offer 2 terabytes of storage and a USB-C front port. It also promises features like faster Wi-Fi capabilities and a new controller at a $499 price point. Details on Elwood, the code name for the Series S refresh, aren't quite as specific. The documents promise better internal storage and Wi-Fi for $299, with a 60-day gap between the two console releases to give Elwood its own moment earlier in the holiday to maximize sales.
These improved versions are also accompanied by a new controller. The two-tone controller, codenamed Sabile, includes direct-to-cloud connection, a rechargeable and swappable battery, precision haptic feedback, where have I heard that term before, quiet buttons and thumbsticks, and lift-to-weight capabilities. Microsoft is eyeing 2028 for a next-gen console. According to the documents, the company is thinking of its next console as a hybrid game platform that will fully utilize the cloud. We will enable new levels of performance beyond the capabilities of the client hardware alone, the company wrote in an internal slide. In an email to Microsoft executives Chris Capicella and Takashi Numoto, Spencer called Nintendo the prime asset for us in gaming. I've had numerous conversations with the LT of Nintendo about tighter collaboration and feel like if any US company would have a chance with Nintendo, we are probably in the best position. However, Spencer noted that he didn't see a mutually agreeable merger for the two companies, and he didn't believe hostile action would be a good move, so we are playing the long game. And in news sure to disappoint a lot of fans, Elder Scrolls 6 won't be released until 2026 at the earliest, and PlayStation 5 owners shouldn't expect it at all. Its launch is only for PC and Xbox.
Wow.
So when the headlines started dropping after this leak, you started seeing old things like the Switch, the next version of the Switch will be on par with PS4 hardware. Like, well, we talked about that back in July when mm-hmm. it leaked. And it's like, oh, well, Bobby Kotick has seen the Switch too. Like, yeah, we talked about that in July when it leaked. And it's like all this old news was recycling through. And then come to find out the reason it was recycling through is because somebody had gotten a hold of the whole leaked documents from Microsoft. And some of it was repeat stuff, and some of it is out of date, like Phil Spencer said. But it is interesting stuff anyway.
Can you imagine being the guy who found it first? Go online, right? You're in the morning. You're like, all right, you know, I'm just going to check this website. Holy
Call everybody. Call everybody.
A true moment of nerdgasm.
Right. See, I was kind of thinking, like, if you're the intern at Microsoft who already got in trouble once for not redacting the stuff, and let's say that you just got all kinds of talking to and whatever at work, but you managed to keep your job. And then it comes around a second time, and it's the biggest leak now in company history.
Oh, Jesus.
There's no wondering about whether or not you're keeping your job. There is how fast are you going to be able to send out that email with your contact information once you get kicked out?
I'll just be handed in the laptop then, or?
Yeah, pretty much. I just walk by, like, put my badge in the desk. It's like, I'm gone.
Yeah, you know what? I'll fall on my sword. You don't have to do it. No, I don't need to have anybody walk me out. I know the way.
No, they would probably walk you out with an armed escort to ensure that you don't screw anything else up.
Probably. And still, a lot of this doesn't really sound like news.
Right.
Like Elder Scrolls 6 won't be released until 2026 at the earliest. It's going to be closer to 2030. It absolutely is. You know mm-hmm. it is. And it's going to be exclusive to Xbox and PC. Again, if you were holding your breath that it was going to come to PlayStation, you just haven't been paying attention.
I will say, though, I'm excited about this refresh of the Series X and S, mostly because the 2 terabyte storage is pretty cool. I will say, though, a cylinder doesn't exactly say box to me.
The X unbox.
And also, the nickname Elwood, is somebody a Blues Brothers fan here? Is that,
it would seem that way.
We're on a mission from Gad.
But yeah, the precision haptic feedback in the controller. Hey, Sony, can we copy your homework? Okay. Exactly. Just change it a little bit so nobody notices. But it's a super cool feature, and I can definitely see why Microsoft would want something like that. I don't think that enough games take full advantage of what it can do.
Well, and who's to say that Nintendo won't follow suit with some sort of haptic feedback controller for the newer Switch that comes out, or even this the existing Switch?
Well, that will be definitely the case when they get bought out by Xbox.
I doubt that'll happen. Sega!
Well, you remember the old story when Microsoft was still, like, the Xbox was still pretty new, and so they sent executives over to Nintendo and offered to buy them and basically got laughed out of the conference room.
Yes, yes.
If I remember right, too, they said they would laugh for an hour straight.
I mean, who knows how serious this actually was. There's no way they could be serious about actually thinking they could buy Nintendo.
No. In my personal opinion, I think Nintendo is too big and too successful to have another company like Microsoft come and buy them out?
You know, I would have said that back in 2020. I would have said there's no possible way, but there has been so many mergers and acquisitions in gaming lately that this might not surprise me. However, the price tag to buy out Nintendo would be astronomical.
According to Macro Trends, Nintendo net worth as of September 13, 2023 is $55.43
billion. Right, and that's $55.43 billion as it sits now. If you're buying, though, from Nintendo, they're going to say, but in perpetuity, because you have all of our IPs and everything like that, we're going to charge you a lot more. So I would imagine it would be $150 billion in order to gain everything from Nintendo. The other piece to this is, do you think that the Federal Trade Commission would be cool with taking out one of the biggest of only three, this oligopoly that exists in gaming, only three console makers, and now just making it two?
Yeah, that's what that was going to be the next thing I was going to say, is they could barely buy Activision Blizzard as it is. And right. Now, assuming that does go through, like it looks like it will, then they super are never going to be allowed to buy Nintendo.
No, because you know Sony would throw a wrench in the plans. They would whine and cry and say, it's not fair. Give us an exclusivity for Call of Duty again. And then we'll allow it.
I would say Microsoft would be like, fucking fine. Yeah, exactly. We're getting Nintendo. Do you think Microsoft would be a good steward of Nintendo?
Well, they could have that mentality of Nintendo is the child's department, whereas Microsoft or Xbox is the adult's department.
I feel very called out right now.
I'm not trying to call anybody out. I mean, for one, enjoy games on both the Xbox slash PlayStation as opposed to the Switch or in conjunction with the Switch. But it still feels like a majority of the kiddie looking games are on the Switch.
Like Mortal Kombat 1.
Exactly.
I mean, that's how they fix Mortal Kombat 1. They just make it like chibi baby characters instead. So it's like Mortal Kombat for kids.
Oh, I don't know about that.
All the fatalities are friendships.
Yep. There's no blood. It's like glitter and rainbows.
Or sweat like on Super Nintendo.
Right. Well, does this really seem like that bad of a leak, though? Yes, it's laying out their roadmap, but what harm is that going to do to Microsoft? How does that effectively hurt them?
The only thing that I would say is maybe it just takes away some of the hype, you know, because we're basically at this point where the kids who looked under their parents' bed and found their Christmas presents already, so they got to pretend.
Guilty.
Like they're surprised, right? Mm-hmm. Like, oh, I didn't expect this.
That's exactly what I wanted for Christmas.
And I don't even know if that's a bad thing, because they like hype. They want it. I guess the real downside that I would say is, like, let's say they want to do the refresh, which everybody knew was coming. You could safely assume that midway through the console life cycles, they're going to get a pro version or you know, something along those lines. Mm-hmm. But let's say instead of $4.99, they put it out for $5.99. And then everybody's like, rah, you said $4.99. They're like, well, no, we didn't. That was just a number that we put out a couple years ago. But that's about all I got.
And the other thing, I think, would just maybe from a business standpoint, if your competitors know what you're doing, maybe that's not always a great thing.
Yeah, because they can head you off at the pass. And exactly. Like maybe Nintendo could come out with their own haptic feedback controller and like, oh, look at Microsoft. Huh? They're late to the party, as always.
I think probably the worst thing about it all is that it just makes Microsoft look bad again. Like I said, they loaded the unredacted documents themselves. So it's not a great look.
Nope. Can't blame it on a third party this time.
Mm-mm. But somebody totally did get fired.
And if you are that person, we would like you to reach out to the Gamers Week podcast.
We would so love to have an interview with you.
Before we move on, let's take a quick break to talk about our sponsor. This segment is proudly sponsored by A Gamer Looks at 40 podcast. The show explores the history of video games through the stories and experiences of the people who lived it. Join host Bill Tucker along with a rotating cast of friends, family, podcasters, journalists, and anybody with a story to tell as they go beyond the bits and bytes to share personal recollections of the last 30 years of gaming. This Monday, part 4 of Bill's Earthbound series drops with a focus on the game's final battle, ending, and overall final thoughts. So the question of the week is, what is your favorite 16-bit video game ending? Let Bill know your answer by replying to his pinned tweet at @agamerlooksat40 on Twitter. So what about you guys? What's your favorite 16-bit video game ending?
So I'm going to go a little unconventional here. I'm actually going to go with Altered Beast. So if anybody who's played through Altered Beast knows that at the end of the game, it is revealed that this is all just a movie shoot and that there were no baddies. Everybody packs it up and goes home. And it is the most anticlimactic ending to
spoiler alert
I've ever seen.
Holy crap.
That's awesome.
Yep.
I'm going to go with Super Metroid. It's kind of spoilery. This is a spoilery topic anyway. So I apologize if you don't know this, but like at the end, you're fighting the big Metroid. And just when it's about to kill you, it doesn't, because it recognizes you. It's the Metroid that you rescued from the first game. And instead, as it's dying, it helps you defeat Mother Brain.
And dies itself.
And dies itself. And it's like, oh, it's the feelings.
The ultimate weapon in the universe that you're trying to contain and kill, you all of a sudden get instant feels for.
Yeah. I mean, it's sweet.
Oh, that's sweet.
What about you, Donnie?
Again, I can't really say I have a favorite ending. You know, trying to come up with an ending from the myriad of games that are out there. One of the ones that just like I remember off the top of my head is Super Mario World, where it kind of goes back through the certain levels that you've played through, and it shows like all the happy things going on. It's almost reminiscent of the ending of Episode 1, The Phantom Menace, like after they defeat. Trust me, I understand the ground I'm tiptoeing on. But when they start looking at the other the planets and everything, like, oh, they're all celebrating the different places. That makes me think of the Super Mario World. And yeah, that's the only ending I can come up with off the top of my head.
I have a lot of feelings about this comparison, but I think it's probably best we just move on.
Yeah, just move on. So we're going to end the show a little differently today with a segment we're calling News Rewind, where we look at gaming headlines from decades past. Tonight's article is The Gaming of Violence, published in the New York Times on April 30th, 1999. This article discusses the Columbine shooting, so if you're not in the right headspace for this topic, go ahead and skip, and we'll catch you next week. What Eric Harris and Dylan Klybold saw as they made their murderous way through Columbine High School last week looked nothing like the images they saw while playing the video game called Doom. Instead of heavily armed, square-chinned men and Prognathus monsters roaming a fortress set in a vaguely Asiatic mountain range, the two teenagers saw ordinary students lying prostrate in the blandly overlit hallways and classrooms of a modern American high school. How that hideous reality compared to the fantasy of Doom in the minds of those two boys is impossible to judge.
The search for cause in the Littleton shootings continues, and much of it has come to focus on violent video games. Every human, adolescent, or adult entertains fantasies of one kind or another. What makes them fantasies is the recognition, reinforced every passing day, that the world does not bend to our wishes. But as entertainment technology advances, it becomes easier to act out computer-simulated virtual versions of the stereotype fantasies our culture markets so well. Something provided a conduit of sorts between the fantasies Mr. Harris and Mr. Klybold indulged and the reality they forced upon their classmates. For several reasons, suspicion points to video games. As violent as they are, games like Doom and Doom 2 and Quake are also relentlessly first person. The screen portrays the player's field of view, and the only visual token of the player's identity is the gun barrel that protrudes into the bottom of the frame. In most of these games, the setting and the violence are inherently unrealistic. What is realistic in a nightmarish way is the sense of rushed, three-dimensional movement and the shift in skill levels that occurs as a child plays more and more. After a few hours of Doom, a child isn't virtually more skillful at pointing and shooting. He is actually more skillful. As a player improves, he is rewarded by an increase in the level of violence.
What is truly alarming is the kind of fantasy these games embody. Normally, when children indulge their fantasies, they tend to animate not only themselves, but also the world around them. They dramatize it and bring it to life. This is one important step, understanding the psychological reality of other human beings. But the fantasy embodied in video games is a narcissistic fantasy of rage. The psychology it profiles is brutally simple. An armed first-person actor in a hostile world full of completely dehumanized targets. This is a fantasy that inevitably prevents the player from personifying his assailants, which is why it has worked so well as a form of military training. The danger lies in the way video games challenge and limit imagination as well as their apparent violence. On psychologically vulnerable children, it seems plain that such games must wreak a kind of havoc, reinforcing the isolation and fortifying their anger. Still, most children who play violent video games do not go on to murder their classmates. Nor in a nation full of real guns is banning virtual violence likely to put an end to school shootings. Oddly, those who categorically blame violent video games for the murders at Columbine High School risk making the same mistake they accuse adolescents of making, confusing fantasy and reality. Not every fantasy, no matter how violent, is a sign of sober intent.
The last part was well said. The one thing I disagree about in this article is the fact that it says that not only does it make them virtually improved, it makes them actually improved. Like, the author thinks it translates to the real world. Like, this person or this child can go out because they handled an AK-47 in the game with no recoil or anything like that. They can now transfer that into the real world, go out and pick up a weapon, immediately fire it, immediately aim and do whatever and be quick about it and have that translate. And I completely disagree with that.
I also think that if we take the context from when this was written, this idea of violence in video games had been percolating for a little while. You had those hearings with Congress about violent video games. There was an uproar in regards to that, as well as within the future of creating the ESRB that kind of went along with it. So this whole concept of violent video games was actually relatively fresh and new in the minds of people. So I think one of the things that we have to be aware of with this article, because it was written in 1999, is that they haven't had 40 or 30 years of violent video games out there.
It says a lot of stuff that I think today we recognize, at least those of us who are willing to accept a non-biased viewpoint of it, because for decades, people have been trying to create the link between video games and violence, and it's never been able to be done without any doubt. If you want to believe it, you can probably find stuff that confirms your bias already, because, you know, when you paint it a certain light like this guy does, well, it seems obvious if you don't think about it beyond what the words on the page said, like, oh, the children isn't just better at the video game, they're better at aiming guns. Yeah, I'm sure that's why the military has completely done away with actual target practice training and just has all the recruits play video games now.
Right.
Totally, that totally happened. But considering in the face of something so horrendous that this article does not wholesale blame video games, this was actually pretty brave. Yeah, they're violent video games, but not everybody who plays them is going to become a murderer. And at that point, that's not what anybody was interested in reading. Right, they wanted a scapegoat. They wanted to know what to blame. This article, at least a little bit, says it's not that simple.
I think with today having more and more and more and an ungodly amount of violent video games out, I don't see that anybody calling for a direct correlation between that kind of real world violence and video games any more than they did back in the 90s.
Unless you're the Prime Minister of France.
Unless you're that guy, but I mean, let's be honest.
Yeah, I think those voices are getting quieter and fewer and far between, but it is an idea that persists and has never gone away.
Of course. I think that will always be with us. People needing a scapegoat, people blaming music for rebellious teenagers, people blaming violent movies for how people act.
Oh, I'm sorry. Hang on. Unless you're the French president, not prime minister. I wanted to look that up before I sounded stupid.
I wouldn't have questioned you.
I sounded very confident when I said it, didn't
I? I even agreed.
What I found interesting about this article in particular is that because it was so new, there was a lot of misinformation out there as well. I remember in particular at that time, there was a lot of blame being thrown around. I remember, you know, they were something about wearing a trench coat often.
Was an
example of, you know, oh, you must be a violent person. And I had friends at school that donned a trench coat, a duster, if you will. Just all of these different things that people were suggesting as to why. Because nobody really understood why somebody would go and do this. This was something that I think was relatively new. It was a level of violence that I don't think that our country was used to at that point. It's sad to say that we've become more accustomed to things like this. But again, there is no common denominator as to what seems to be the reason behind that. Maybe right. Mental health, I don't know, but no one seems to know the real answer.
So to end on something not quite so heavy, where were you guys in 1999?
I remember I was in high school. No, I was in middle school. What was happening at the time is that there were people who were calling in bomb threats to school. So that was constant. Right after Columbine, is that what would end up happening is that they would bring all the buses into the parking lot and everybody would have to get on like their bus and wait for, you know, them to make sure that the police could come in and clear that threat. But that happened probably 5 times that year.
Because somebody thought they were being funny.
Right. Exactly.
1999, I was working at WorldCom in their call center. I think I was working nights. So 4 days on, 4 days off, 10 hour days and going to school. So that was fun.
Jesus.
1999 was my senior year. So I definitely on autopilot, just wanted to finish the year and get out of my parents' house, get out of high school. Basically, why? I wanted to be anywhere else. I hated high school.
I know.
I skipped every single day that I possibly could.
And you didn't catch hell for it at home?
Only if you get caught. I don't think I ever got caught skipping school.
A little more of the onion is peeled back about Blue.
Blue was also smoking in the boys' room.
Smoking in the boys' room.
You weren't in that boys' room. How do you know?
You've got a reputation, Blue.
Let's go ahead and wrap up this episode. Thank you for listening to episode 91 of Gamers Week Podcast, and a big thank you to the Retro Game Club Podcast, Love Retro BTW, and A Gamer Looks at 40 Podcast for sponsoring this episode. Don't forget to check out their links in the show notes. If you want to connect with Gamers Week, follow us on Twitter at Gamers Week PC. Email us at gamersweekpodcast@gmail.com. Watch us on Twitch at twitch.tv/gamersweekpodcast. Visit our merch store at gamers-week-podcast.creator-spring.com. Or if you want to do it the easy way, follow the link in the show notes. Join us on Patreon at patreon.com/gamersweek. And finally, since you made it all the way to the end of this episode, please leave us a rating and a review to let us know how we did. We really do value your feedback. And while you're there, consider subscribing on iTunes, Spotify, or your podcast platform of choice.
So, which comic book character would you least like to see involved in sexual congress?
I feel like there's a lot of really weird ones out there.
Yeah.
Okay, hang on. Weirdest comic book characters. Well, there's Arm Fall Off Boy. There is Dog Welder. Who has no powers per se, but did have a unique penchant for welding dead dogs to criminals.
Jesus Christ.
Asbestos Lady.
You're coughing the entire time.
Probably. Here you go. The Living Eraser. He can erase his victims, wiping them out with bold strokes. Make your own jokes.
Well, on that note, good night.
Yep, good night.
Good night, everybody. that I was told that I would receive a piece. Welcome to Gamers Week Uncut.
Welcome to Gamers Week Uncut.
Welcome to Gamers Week Uncut, patrons with benefits. This is the unscripted, patron-only bonus cast with less editing and more dirty jokes. We don't know where the conversation will go, but we're sure it will be weird.
This fish just went right on my nipple, and I'm just like...
I Google Street Fighter 6. The first search result that comes up is people think they can see Ryu's dick in the Street Fighter 6 reveal.
Listen up here, kids. You're not going to want to get one of those VDSTDs things, right? Make your dick fall off. When you go, grab a pro. You'll be doing it for America.
That was perfect.
If you want to hear weekly episodes of our patron-only bonus cast, join us at patreon.com/gamersweek.